You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
What's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 378. I'm Jimmy Kemsky from GorillaVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of BleedingGreenNation.com. Got a lot to get to in our Eagles-Buccaneers playoff preview. We were actually set to record this a little earlier this morning, and then, boom, A.J. Brown news comes out that he is not going to play in this game. So this is sort of like an emergency pod, I guess, in that we're recording it right after that news came down, even though we had already planned on doing an episode this time anyway. Whatever. That's bad news for the Philadelphia Eagles, who limp into this playoff matchup, having lost five of their last six games. Of course, losing their last two to the horrid Arizona Cardinals and New York Giants. A lot to get to, of course. But before we do, Wrong Crowd Beer is where you can find the finest beers in the land. You can go there in Westchester, PA, to their brewery. Awesome place to go. Lots of TVs, good food. Really good beer. Definitely good time to just drop in and have some food and beers. Also, you can order from them online at wrongcrowdbeer.com or wherever you go buy your beers. They don't have Wrong Crowd Beer wherever you go buy your alcohol. Say, yo, Goober, where's the Wrong Crowd Beer? Get it in here. And I'll come back every day and buy beer and drink a lot, because I love my Wrong Crowd Beer that much. And then they'll get it in there and then you can have it. Sure. I guess that'll work. Brandon, what's your favorite Wrong Crowd Beer?
Well, by a lot, you mean like, you know, in a responsible fashion, a lot over a, you know, period of time. Obviously everyone knows I like the First Anniversary Ale, their strawberry milkshake IPA. Just had another one of those the other night. Very fantastic. I would also recommend that people give Wrong Crowd Beer a follow on Instagram, because they'll be posting, you know, different specials. I know they have like a Wednesday like pizza night special and different things at the actual tap room there. So yeah, give them a follow, check them out. I highly doubt you will be you will not regret it. That's my point. You will not regret checking out Wrong Crowd Beer. Jimmy, Eagles playoff game.
Yes,
here they are. Everyone's fired up. Everyone's excited. The hype video comes out. Did you see the hype video they released?
I didn't watch it. Nope, I did not.
The hype video they put out is, to their credit, I guess, self-aware at some level. It wasn't like, you know, let's go, you know, getting all fired up. It's like Jason.
No, Brian Dawkins was absent from this.
It video, was Jason Kelsey. And it was like an acknowledgement of how bad the team has been for a bit here, but they still want to win. So, and
that's pretty funny. I'd heard kind of what it was about, but I hadn't watched it yet. But that's funny that they are self-aware about, you know, where the direction this season has suddenly headed.
Hard not to be. It is a really weird situation, because typically playoffs are here, exciting, you know, looking forward to the game. Here it's a little different, at least in some corners of the world, where they're 1-5 going into this game. And they're banged up after losing players, including A.J. Brown, in a game where they didn't have anything to gain, ultimately. So, tough situation.
We didn't know that before the... So, I know that's going to be a huge criticism of Nick Sirianni. And let's start there, actually, okay, with this injury. I think that's a good place to start. I think it's going to be a huge criticism of Nick Sirianni and the Eagles front office and whoever was involved in the decision to play starters against the Giants. Of course, if we go in the Wayback Machine to before the Week 18 game, as you already probably remember, the Eagles could have won the NFC East with a win over the Giants and a Cowboys loss in Washington to the Commanders. That was unlikely, of course. The Cowboys were, what, 13-point favorites, I think, in that game against Washington. And actually, Washington gave a game for a little bit, like into the second quarter. They had a lead, and then eventually Dallas blew them out. I kind of felt like it was a no-brainer to play starters from the Eagles' perspective, because it's certainly possible that Dallas could have lost that game. And then if you win your game, then you become the 2 seed. And I think the difference between the 2 seed and the 5 seed is actually pretty huge. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to go to the Super Bowl. This team isn't going to go to the Super Bowl pretty clearly as the 5 seed. I think if they were the 2 seed, then, you know, there's at least a puncher's chance for them to have gotten there. So I didn't have a problem with them playing starters in that game. Now, of course, that stadium happens to have a hard turf that guys tend to get injured on more frequently than other places around the league. And they lose their best skill player in AJ Brown in that game. Got hurt, what, the first quarter, I think, of that game. Didn't return. And now he's not going to play against the Bucs in this first, you know, playoff game here. So the Eagles are going to get a lot of heat for that. But I almost kind of feel like that'll be a little bit unfair to them. What I don't like about what they did in that game is they kind of went half measure. So they didn't just go all out to try to win that game. Like, Fletcher Cox rested in that game. He didn't really have an injury. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, he's like, his body's taking a toll over the season, and he could use the rest as an older player. But if that were like a really, like, if like the Eagles were, you know, definitely like win and you win the division, he'd have played in that game. Like, there's a little doubt about that in my mind.
He wasn't on the injury report, and he was inactive.
And then, like, once they got behind a little bit, then boom, they were really quick to pull the important players out at that point. So it was kind of like a half measure, you know, playing starters, and that I can't get on board with. You're either going to do it or you're not. Like, don't go half-assed about it. So, you know,
well,
ultimately,
this team loves a half measure. Unfortunately,
they lose that game and they go into the playoffs with even worse momentum than they had previously. And of course, as we mentioned, Dallas already had won anyway, so it didn't matter. But yeah, now this, you know, heading into this Tampa game, AJ Brown out, and now you're starting Devontae Smith. Of course, missed the Giants game. He's expected to play against the Bucs, and then you just have a mishmash of receivers in Julio Jones, Olamide Zaccheaus, Quez Watkins, and Britton Covey. We're gonna have to film. Dallas Goedert's gonna have a bigger role in this game, of course, from the tight end position. But man, to go into this game without AJ Brown, who was your offense basically for the first half of the season when you were rolling, not great.
And that was the first game in week 3 post Vikings sideline blow up where AJ Brown started that run of the like consecutive like 125 yard games. And against the Bucs, he had what, like 14 targets, 9 receptions, 131. I mean, he had 47.3% of the Eagles total receiving in that game alone, just him. The next closest receiver was Olamide Zaccheaus, who had those two big catches, or the one big catch. He had 68 yards, I believe. So, like, a big drop off after him. Devontae Smith has been practicing, like you said, full this week. So that's good news. But, you know,
he looked good, by the way. I was watching him do drills. He had an ankle injury. He didn't have a wrap on it or anything. He looked like normal Devontae. So he's, you know,
that's good news. DeAndre Swift will obviously play after he did not play in week 18. Darius Slay will also be back after missing 4 games. Jalen Hurts was full participation on Friday after being listed as limited on Thursday there. So it looks like, you know, he's going to play, but also I still wonder how, you know, a quarterback's throwing hand injury is going to impact his accuracy or even his ball security, which has already been an issue this season. But, you know, God forbid he's taking off running or he's in the pocket and he might not be able to hold on to it the same way. If he has a hand that is certainly hurting and doesn't have the same amount of strength normally does. So that's significant. And yeah, hey, Jalen Hurts, not only are you playing through this game with that injury, you're also going to do it without your top receiver. It's not really like an ideal kind of circumstance. AJ Brown, we mentioned, is out, but also as of recording this on Saturday morning, Reed Blankenship has not practiced this week yet. That doesn't seem like a good sign. And Sidney Brown's out for the year already with an ACL. So they just have one healthy safety currently in Kevin Byard, which,
yeah, on their 53,
on their active roster. It sounds like Avante Maddox could potentially start at safety next to him. And the practice squad options there would be Tristan McCollum, who has been up the past 2 weeks, and would also be, or not past, yeah, past game. And then Mekhi Gardner, who the Eagles have used as like an emergency safety. And then your boy Britton Covey, who got snubbed, I think, Jimmy, didn't make all pro, didn't make Pro Bowl. He has been limited in practice.
Yeah, getting back to Jalen Hurts there for a minute. In practice, actually went to practice on Thursday and Friday. I think they're practicing soon here. I'm not going to make it today on Saturday. On Thursday, Hurts did not throw at all during the media attended portion of practice. Normally he would, but he did not. Friday, he did throw. And the little insight I have on that is, you know, one of the camera guys I'm friendly with had the, like, they were on the far field. So like they purposely were not practicing on the field close to us. Like they didn't want us to see what was happening on that field. But one of the camera guys I'm friendly with, you know, had the full zoom going with his video camera. And he said that he looked fine. I could kind of see him throwing. He looked fine throwing. And I think there was any issues with him, you know, spinning the ball, accuracy, but it's, you know, his power throwing the football looked fine to me, again from pretty far distance away, so like can't really tell that well. But when he was catching the ball, when he was receiving it back, he was very gingerly catching it, you know, like he was catching it normally with his left hand, but his right hand kind of like was making sure that it didn't hit his finger when he was bringing it back in. So he's hurting and he's being careful not to have, you know, as he's trying to have as little contact with that finger as he can, aside from when he throws. So he's not going to be 100% in this game, and we'll see how it affects his throwing and his accuracy when it really matters. But yeah, not a great sign heading into this game. Baker Mayfield's hurt too. He's got a ribs and an ankle injury, and he didn't practice on Thursday. He was limited on Friday. He didn't look good in their week 18 game against the Panthers. And the week before that, I think it was Tyrann Mathieu who hit him. I mean, he got lit up in the ribs. Like he took a hard shot that looked like it hurt a lot. So he won't be 100% either. It's going to be two kind of like, hampered quarterbacks in this game, different injuries, of course. But yeah, I mean, we'll see which one looks better than the other. But, you know, without AJ Brown, man, like, we saw what the offense looked like when he went out against the Giants, and they, you know, obviously the difference here is they'll still have Devontae Smith in this game, but not, I mean, an offense that already is struggling in so many different ways, namely like handling the blitz, not great.
On Baker, yeah, definitely did not look good. Definitely looked hampered by injury. Not that, you know, Baker looks amazing, awesome, flawless when he's healthy, but certainly did not look even, like he might normally look when he's healthy. Also is following the same path that seems to be like leading up to week 18. He went from did not practice, limited to full over the course of the 3 days over the week. So I just saw people kind of like be like, oh, he's not practicing this week. I'm like, I think it's just the same path. I think they're just kind of taking it.
He's expected to go. Yeah. I don't think there's any danger of him not playing.
So, and even if he didn't, I mean, Kyle Trask against this defense right now, I'm sure could have some success. Any case, yeah, definitely not a lot of juice.
And that was actually like before the season began, that was like a legit quarterback battle in training camp in Tampa. Like there was Kyle Trask got a chance to win that job, and Mayfield ultimately like pretty easily won, as far as I understand. I'm a bigger Baker guy than most, I think. Like I think he's actually had a pretty good year, and he's had like, you know, some games here and there where he was awesome. And like, obviously the receivers are really good in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And then if you want to throw in, you know, Rashad White, who is a big part of their passing game as well. Like it's a formidable passing offense that Tampa has. They can't run the ball worth a squat, but they can move the ball through the air. And as we've seen, the Eagles defense has just been a total disorganized mess. I mean, they weren't great when it was still Sean Desai as the defensive coordinator, but ever since Matt Patricia took over, guys don't know what they're doing. They don't know their assignments. They don't know who they're covering. And when the Giants are just doing whatever they want to you, possession after possession, the Arizona Cardinals are just running it down your throat. Not, you know, I mean, come on, what are we doing here this late in the season when you should be playing your best ball and the Eagles are, you know, very clearly playing their worst ball, not just this season, but in a long time. And it's not looking great. You mentioned the safeties, like Avante Maddox, I don't think has played well at all in the slot since his return to the lineup. And he's probably still hurting, and it's probably, you know, all injury related. But if he's playing safety, that's not great. I think Bradley Roby has been decidedly bad in the slot. So if he's now your slot, your starting slot, and Avante's in the, like, they've not done a good job tackling this team. Roby's been awful as a tackler. Maddox has not been good as a tackler, you know, since his return. And I mean, they have guys that can bully ball you in the passing game in Mike Evans, and in Chris Godwin's a bully. Rashad White can make guys miss in the open field. I don't like the way that this game is shaping up, both offensively with missing AJ Brown and defensively possibly being without Reed Blankenship. Not that Reed Blankenship, I mean, you and I like him as a player, but I think he's kind of fallen off as the season has progressed here. And, you know, but with him out, and you have Avante Maddox playing safety, maybe Tristan McCollum, maybe Mekhi Gardner filling in here and there, not looking good for the back end of the secondary against, again, a Tampa offense that you know, can hurt you in the passing game.
Bucks pretty healthy otherwise. Have some of the guys who are limited on their report, but nothing too, you know, major. And even on injured reserve, they're pretty healthy. I know Ryan Jensen, but that's been like all year. They're not missing someone like, you know, who has been a key contributor for them this year, as much as they've mostly kind of just, they have their guys. So they're a pretty healthy team, but so are the Eagles for other than, you know, AJ Brown. But I mean, like,
sure.
Bigger, like, there's more injured teams than the Eagles out there, is my point. anyway, why don't we take a break here, Jimmy, and actually dive deep into the matchup itself. We will be back after this.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Back here on BGN Radio, which in addition to Wrong Crowd Beer Company is also brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. You go to RighteousFelon.com. Use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. Underrated matchup going into this game against the Buccaneers. Will the Eagles actually consume enough Righteous Felon Craft Jerky to be fueled up, unlike they did not during this six-game stretch where they're only 1-5? So, big thing to follow along with. If the Eagles win, safe to say they were having their right to sell craft jerky. And if they lose, well, safe to say the opposite. So go to righttoselling.com, use discount code BGN15, again, for 15% off your order. That discount code doesn't expire. So you can kind of just use that over and over if you're really liking right to sell craft jerky, which I'm pretty confident you will, because we hear from a lot of listeners who do indeed love Righteous Felon craft jerky. Okay, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I did an article this week where I kind of looked at what's different for the Eagles and the Bucks from the last time they played back in week 3, which feels like a long time ago,
okay,
doesn't it? It feels like an eternity ago in some ways. I think the overall trend of these teams is obviously different. Both teams are 2-0 in their last matchup, but the Bucks are 5-1 in their last 6. The Eagles are 1-5 in their last 6. The point differential for the Eagles in that stretch is -59. The Bucks are +38. I'm just going to run through some of these. Jalen Hurts was healthier than he is now, but he was dealing with that his first of 2 flu games this year, or flu-like symptoms. Seemed to be worse off, obviously, in that Seahawks game, but I thought that was worth noting. I think one of the biggest things, other than the obvious Patricia change, you just kind of talked about it in the first segment. Early in the season, at that point, and I know the Bucs game hasn't been, running game hasn't been, you know, amazing this year, but it was like a really, really, really bad early on the season. It was looking like just not even worth their time at all. And the Eagles were able, conversely, to run on the Bucs. They had 201 rushing yards against the Buccaneers. That's the most the Bucs defense has allowed. It's the Eagles' second best rushing performance this year. The Bucs, though,
that was the game. Just to jump in here real quick, that was the game where like the Bucs finally scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and then the Eagles burned off the last 9+ minutes of that game. There were some passes in there, but mostly through the run game, and they just dominated them to the point where Todd Bowles didn't even bother calling his timeouts at the end of that game. He just let the clock run out after the Eagles had driven, you know, basically the whole field and took 9 minutes off the clock. Just, all right, I guess we lost then. Didn't even bother calling his timeouts. They were so defeated. And then defensively, I thought that was probably their best game of the season, the Eagles. Way back in week three, I watched, you know, I watched bits and pieces of that game this week, and it just didn't look like the same team.
Very much so. I mean, it was 25-3 until that touchdown plus 2-point conversion by the Bucs late in the game, when the Eagles were clearly, you know, playing a little more conservative and playing a bit off and just trying not to get beat over the top. But I think the run game is very different, because ever since that game that the Bucs had, the run defense has tightened up for them. They have only allowed just 93.6 yards per game, and they currently rank tied for the fourth fewest rushing yards per attempt in the league at 3.8. So I think their run defense has gotten better. I should also note that the Bucs had some like defensive injuries in that game as well. Like Vita Vea played in his third, he entered the game banged up. He played like his third lowest snap count of the year in that game. So he clearly didn't seem to be like full force of what he is now more so seems to be. So that also factored in there. Devin White was banged up, where we saw him have that
interception.
Yeah. And that probably
and he couldn't
he was
run.
Healthy, a pick six.
He just ran out of bounds.
So it was like, wait, what's going on with that?
Yeah.
So that's a factor, certainly. They were also missing Carlton Davis, which is significant. And Jamal.
Sure. Starting corner.
Yes. And Jamal Dean also got hurt in that game. So they were out. Both starting cornerbacks at one point during the game. They also did not have Kalijah Kancey, another factor in the run game, I think, certainly.
He's had a good rookie season.
So I just wanted to note all that. But anyway, so that kind of just talks about why the Bucs have been getting better a bit, I think, at stopping the run since that game.
And Vita Vea, by the way, is like the exact kind of like nose tackle, just a huge guy that has traditionally given Jason Kelce problems, like a Dexter Lawrence type player, Linval Joseph back in the day when he played for the Giants.
Eddie Goldman.
I mean, those huge guys just give him trouble more so than, you know, the faster, more elusive defensive tackles.
In the Bucs' first 10 games, they averaged 76.9 rushing yards. And in the last seven games, they're up to 105.7. So, you know, not amazing still, but better. Certainly, they've been better in that regard. And the Eagles run defense, meanwhile, around the same time here, picking like the same kind of time frame, doesn't line up evenly because the Eagles had a week 10 bye, the Bucs didn't. But in the Eagles pre-bye existence of their team, the first nine games, Jimmy, they were allowing just 66.3 rushing yards per game.
Yeah.
Since the bye, do you know how many rushing yards per game they have allowed?
I do, because it was in my thing. It's 145.1.
So more than double of what they allowed before the bye week. So that's the thing. Like, I know, like, it's like, oh, the Bucs can't really run the ball. I mean, I think almost anyone can run the ball against the Eagles right now, or at least comparatively to where they were earlier in the year. So I think that's
nine games. One team gained 100 or more yards against them. Those Commanders week four. And it was only 107. And then their last eight games, all eight of those opponents ran for at least 100 yards against them.
And
of course, and the Cardinals ran for 221 just a couple of weeks ago. So, like, you know, their run defense has kind of fallen apart.
It's felt that way, too. I mean, really, even I know the numbers go back to the bye, but even like in that Chiefs game, Isaiah Pacheco, the Chiefs are just like running and having their way with the Eagles run defense in a way we just didn't see earlier in the year and haven't seen mm-hmm. for a bit.
Niners, so, of course, did yep. whatever they wanted in the run game. Yeah.
So
Cowboys, Cowboys who haven't run the ball well, they ran for 138 against
that's
them
right.
too.
I think that's a big, big time difference from the last game. I think the Bucs have gotten better, not great at it, but they've been better at the run. They're going up against the Eagles run defense that has gotten way worse. And I think the Eagles the Eagles can still run the ball, I think, at some level, but I think it's going to be tougher to do it against the Bucs than it was the last time.
Yeah, the Bucs, I mean, last 2 years, so both in 2022 and 2023, they were last in the NFL in both yards per carry and rushing yards per game. So, I mean, they don't want to run the ball because they can't normally, but they probably will to some degree more than they normally do against this Eagles defense that hasn't been able to stop it. But I mean, they're at their core, their offense is going to be built around getting the ball to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, of course. And as I mentioned, Rashad White, which against these Eagles linebackers, I mean, there's another guy too. It's not even just Rashad White. So they have a tight end, Kate Otten, who was a rookie last year, was a fourth round pick. And he's kind of come on for them over the last, you know, half of the season. So in their last 9 games, he has 6 receptions of 20 plus yards, which, just to put that into, you know, context, Dallas Goedert has same number of 20 plus yard catches, 6 over the entire season this year. So he's a guy that's come along, and the Eagles have shown over these, you know, ever since Matt Patricia took over, that their linebackers are just completely lost in coverage, especially. And I mean, that's a tough duo to kind of defend, like kind of two under the radar names in Rashad White and Kate Otten, but those guys can do damage. If you don't have guys that can cover them, it doesn't appear that the Eagles do.
Yeah, I would say there's what level of faith can you have in this Eagles defense? There's just right. none. You can't. I mean, I'm not trying to be only negative. I think point, we're trying to look at the positives too, but the positives lie on the offensive side of the ball, if at all. There's just nothing from the defense that I think you can reasonably feel great about, other than the Bucs maybe not looking amazing, just because, again, Baker's banged up. That Panthers game is stuck in my head because I watched that game last week, the Bucs and the Panthers. You know, Bucs needing that win to win the division, and they couldn't put away the Panthers.
They got lucky because the Panthers had a long touchdown run that got called back on a penalty. So I mean, 9-0. I mean, that doesn't sound impressive at all. I mean, the shutout's nice, but you know, it's against the Panthers. But shutouts are a shutout in the NFL. It's hard to do, but not as impressive. I mean, even like winning by 9, not as impressive as even that looked.
Yeah, it's like weird to say that a 9-0 game was closer than it looked, but it was. It was a lot closer than that game looked. The Bucs easily could have lost that game to a Panthers team that is incredibly just lifeless and awful and literally the worst team in the NFL. So what else about this matchup stands out to you, Jimmy?
Well, the one thing I will say about the Eagles defense and the return of Slay, not everyone, a lot of Eagles fans, you know, don't love Darius Slay, but he's going to make a big difference in this game compared to, you know, what they've been rolling out the last few weeks. I think he's obviously a big upgrade over anyone on the roster at cornerback. But especially James Bradbury, who's had a really tough season after, you know, great season in 2022. Kelee Ringo has been up and down as a rookie. Probably should have gotten him more snaps earlier in the season so he'd be more prepared for this kind of moment going forward. But it'll be, I imagine they're not going to bench Bradbury for this game. It'll probably be Slay and Bradbury starting with, you know, as you mentioned, if Avante Maddox plays safety, it'll be Bradley Roby in the slot. If they don't do that, if Tristan McCollum or if Reed Blankenship can play and Avante's in the slot, then, you know, that's how it'll be. But I do think that the return of Slay is, you know, maybe a little undersold looking into this game. He's been, you know, he's had plenty of time to rest. That's another one, by the way. We didn't mention him when we mentioned like they rested Fletcher Cox. That's a guy that probably, I mean, that was his fourth game out. So when he originally got his knee scoped, if they knew he was going to be out 4 games, they'd have put him on IR because they could have used that roster spot, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his return theoretically should have been within, you know, three games, seeing as they didn't put him on IR. And it seemed like he probably could have gone, but they held him out to give him a little more rest before the playoffs. So again, half measure in terms of, you know, playing starters or not against the Giants. But he'll be well rested and ready to go for this game. What I look at in this game is, can the pass rush show up? Because it has not in a very long time. And it's just crazy what they're asking Hassan Reddick to do, dropping into coverage as much as he has. Dan Orlovsky pointed out, you know, really hammered the Eagles for first play of the game. The Giants, you know, they went to the, you know, the 2x2 look that we mentioned in the last in the last podcast, where there's two tight ends on the one side, two receivers on the other. And they easily just got Reddick to drop out of his pass rush stance into coverage, and they exploited him. Like, it's just crazy how predictable both the offense and the defense have become on this Eagles team, and just that they're not putting guys in the best position to make plays, which at least Sean Desai was doing that. We didn't see much of Hassan Reddick dropping into coverage when it was Sean Desai. We didn't see that, you know, in 2022 when Jonathan Gannon was the defensive coordinator. We saw Hassan Reddick doing what he's supposed to do, which is go after the passer. So there's that. You know, I think the weakness of this Buccaneers offensive line is up the middle. It's, you know, the center, of course, as you mentioned, Ryan Jensen out for the year. He got hurt in August, and his career is probably over. Robert Haynes, he has filled in there at left guard. Matt Aaron Filer, Stinney? I think.
No, they benched
Matt Filer. Filer got hurt. He was originally their starter, right, and then he got benched, and now it's Aaron Stinney in there. And then at right guard, they're all just guys. Like, they're all below average starters on the interior. But at right guard, it's Cody Mauch, who might be good eventually. He's a rookie second round pick for them this year, so he may grow into a good guard at some point, but he was just not very good this year. Tackles are fine. I mean, Tristan Wirfs is obviously one of the best tackles in the NFL. And Luke Goedeke, who was a guard for them originally, kicked out to right tackle. And he kind of surprisingly had a decent year at right tackle. So they're okay on the edges, but on the interior, which, oh, by the way, we haven't seen these young guys. I think early in the year, we both agree, like, the interior of the Eagles defensive line was looking like a major strength.
Yes.
Keon Carter was crushing it. Jordan Davis was playing really well early in the season. Milton Williams is making plays. Fletcher Cox is, you know, we've mentioned kind of all year, he's had a good year. A lot of those guys have kind of disappeared over the back half of the season, notably the younger guys. And this is a game where they have to step up and make some plays against, you know, one of the weaknesses of this Bucs roster, because we just haven't seen much from those guys at all in the back half of the year.
Jordan Davis doesn't have a sack or quarterback hit since week 7, and he doesn't have a tackle for loss since week 2. So not good. I think
Jalen Carter know that. I hasn't had a tackle for loss since week 2.
Yeah.
I had not seen that. That's a good pull by you. That's not good.
I put it in my snap count post every week because like the streak continues.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's not good.
I will say about Cody Mauch, he entered the Eagles Bucks week 3 game with an injury. He ended up playing. I think he was questionable. He had like one of his worst graded games of the season, which makes sense considering he was going up against that Eagles more fearsome defensive interior at the time. But also, you know, I think it's fair to say he was probably hampered by injury. So again, that's another player who's healthier now, at least in theory. So you might get a better version of them. Looking at some of the other changes from the first matchup, I will mention that the Eagles have former Buccaneer Julio Jones, who's the only, I think, Bucs player to score a touchdown against the Cowboys last year.
Yeah, made a great play. Actually had a really good game in the playoffs against the Cowboys. Like, one of the rare Bucs players to show up in that playoff game last year. And his touchdown catch was really nice. Like, the left corner of the end zone, like, got both feet in. I hadn't done much that season up until then. But
turns it on in the playoffs. Had
a great playoff game out of nowhere. So, some hope, maybe. they're gonna have to get something out of them.
Except against the Eagles. You mentioned the Aaron Stinney thing already. I think one of the bigger changes on like the depth chart for either of these teams is Yaya Diaby, the rookie for the Bucs coming on here. He's developed into a really good starter. Mm-hmm. Early in the season, he was behind the depth chart, or he was behind Joe Tryon on the depth chart. And now he's taken over as a starter. He has 7.5 sacks and 11 TFLs in his last 11 games. So, like, those are like really, you know, strong, especially for a rookie. Like, those are really strong numbers. And I think that's definitely like that's a guy who was going to have a way bigger impact or could have a way bigger impact than he did in that first game.
Yeah, he's he's one of those spider chart freaks where he like his measurables are outstanding. I think it was a third round pick, maybe. Is it Louisville he came out of? Doesn't matter. I don't know. Who cares? But he led their team in sacks. 7.5 sacks for a guy to lead the team in sacks isn't a very high number. But on the season, that Bucs pass rush had 48 sacks, so they got like a lot of contributions from a lot of different players. And that's kind of emblematic of a team that likes to blitz a lot. I think Antoine Winfield, their safety, actually had 6 sacks on the season. And he's probably their best player on their roster, period. Like, he's awesome. I had over 100 tackles, had 6 sacks. I think he had 6 forced fumbles.
Wow. 3 interceptions. Yeah, you're right. He did. That's a crazy number.
And he didn't make the Pro Bowl. That guy didn't make the Pro Bowl.
We're all pro.
It's like that's like exhibit. He didn't make all pro either. I didn't see that.
I'm pretty sure he didn't.
That's like exhibit A for just get rid of the Pro Bowl. that guy didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Well, they kind of did
anyway. It's crazy that the year that he had and not getting the recognition for the year that he had. But that's the guy that I think like pre-snap you got to know where he is at any like on every play. Because they move him around a ton and they just they use him in so many different ways. He's just a really, really good player. But by sacks, they had 4 guys that had at least 5. So Diaby at 7.5, Winfield at 6, Vita Vea had 5.5, which is pretty big number for like your traditional just super ginormous nose tackle that is clogging up the run game. 5.5 sacks is good for that kind of guy. Tryon Troyenka, who you mentioned, had 5. And then Levante David and Shaquille Barrett each had 4.5. Shaquille Barrett has had huge seasons for them in the past, like approached 20 sacks, I think, in at least one season in the past. So that's a guy that they got to, doesn't have big numbers this year, but it's a player that you certainly have to, give some added attention to, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like, I remember back in that game week 3, Bucs pass rush did nothing against the Eagles in that game. But yeah. I think that's another thing that could change in this game, in that better than they were week 3 this year.
Also, you have to worry about the blitz. I mean, there's not really much new to say there, but the fact that the Eagles seemingly cannot have an answer for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no mystery to like what the Giants were going to do last week. Like, they're going to blitz Wink Martindale is going to blitz the Eagles like crazy. And like, they had just played the Giants 2 weeks prior. Like, how did they not know what the game plan was going to be? And they had nothing.
Yeah.
They had nothing for it. And the Giants, I think, were the second most blitz heavy defense in the NFL heading into that game. Only team ahead of them was the Vikings. And then number 3 is the Bucs. And, Todd Bowles, loves to blitz. He hangs his hat on playing good run defense and then getting, opposing offenses into long downs and distances. And then he sends the house against opposing quarterbacks. And, he's had good game plans against Jalen Hurts in the past. As we've mentioned extensively in the podcast before, in that playoff game in 2021, he made sure that if Jalen Hurts was bailing from the pocket, he had to go to his left. Mm-hmm. And he also wanted to make sure in that game that he took away whatever was happening on the right side of the Eagles field. Offensively, he wanted to take that away as the first look. He wanted to make sure that Jalen Hurts tried to beat him in the middle of the field and to the left side of the field. He wanted to keep him in the pocket. And if he escaped the pocket, make sure he goes to the left. That was the basic game plan that they had. And it worked beautifully for the Buccaneers. Jalen Hurts, different player now than he was then. But you can be sure as shit that he's going to have a good game plan for Jalen Hurts in this matchup going forward.
Well, it was also at that time, the Eagles had reinvented themselves during that 2021 season, as we know, and really leaned into the running game in the second half. So a lot of the focus, too, was also like, hey, we're not going to let them run on it. Like, if they're going to have a big day passing, like, that's, we'll make they forced the game to be on Jalen Hurts' arm. They weren't going to allow the Eagles to run the ball. I think it's going to be kind of a similar thing here, because I think the Eagles' best way to get going in this one is to ride DeAndre Swift again and try to get the run game going. But I think the Bucs should be kind of trying to sell that out and forcing you to win through the air when you're down A.J. Brown and you're trying to – you still have Devontae Smith, but you have otherwise beyond that or behind that not the most confidence-inspiring options there. So I expect similar kind of strategy, basically.
I mean, one of the holes in that, though, is they do give up a ton of big plays in the passing game. So they gave up, I think it was 60. I have it here. They gave up 65 pass plays of 20 plus yards, which is a huge, that's just a huge number. And they're kind of the opposite of, you know, sort of the way NFL defenses have, you know, sort of trended over the last few years, like the Vic Fangio style defenses where you're just trying to not give up the big play. This is the total opposite of that. They're trying to force the issue by blitzing mm-hmm. and creating turnovers and creating sacks and, you know, getting stops that way. But they are susceptible to big plays in the back end, which, again, they're all going to be all the more encouraged to just blitz more with A.J. Brown not playing in this game because, mm-hmm. like, that's, you know, their biggest big play receiver that they have, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe this is a game where Quez Watkins can finally show up when they go his way. Certainly Devontae Smith is capable of making big plays down the field. Mm-hmm. Julio Jones, maybe not so much these days. But I mean, you know, they're going to have to pop a big one down the field at some point, which kind of to their detriment, they've tried to rely on the big play too much this season. They've gotten some, but again, probably, would have been better served to use all, you know, areas of the field more than they did, this season. But, I imagine their game plan is going to be trying to hit big plays, trying to hit explosive plays in this game, which again, to their detriment recently, but against this Bucs defense, they are at least this defense is susceptible to it.
Any other thoughts on the matchup?
Yeah, I mean, just the Bucs pass D overall isn't great. So passing yards allowed per game, they're 29th. Completion percentage, 66% is 22nd. Opposing, you know, yards per pass, they're 25th. First downs per game through the air, 30th. So you can throw on this team. And when you look at that and the division they play in, it feels even worse because you're playing Desmond Ridder twice. You're playing Derek Carr twice. You're playing Bryce Young twice. You're playing all these bad teams in your own division. And to be that bad against the pass all season, not great. So I think, like, Eagles fans are going to be looking for the Eagles to run the crap out of the ball, as they've kind of been, you know, subsection of the fan base has been begging for the, you know, since the back half of the season. I don't know if we're going to see that. I think the Eagles are going to look at this Bucs defense and say, we can beat this team through the air, even without A.J. Brown. And I think you're going to see a lot of very frustrated Eagles fans watching the Eagles try to throw on this Bucs team when they don't have any answers for the blitz. Because you know what I think about the Eagles not having answers for the blitz is, by the way? Like, so you and I and all the fans and, you know, anyone that, you know, all the NFL tape Twitter and anyone that, like, has eyes and can watch a football game and have any kind of understanding can see that the Eagles have been terrible against the blitz. I don't think the Eagles think that they don't have answers for the blitz. I think they think that they do have answers for the blitz, but it, you know, just this went wrong against this team, that went wrong against that team, and we're so close to hitting on big plays and blah, 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 blah. I don't think they are, you know, you mentioned earlier about the hype video where they did have sort of some self-awareness of what they were as a team heading into the playoffs. I don't think they have self-awareness in terms of their schemes, both offensively and defensively, specifically offensively against the blitz. I feel like they think that they can beat the blitz, even though they haven't in a long time.
Well, that's encouraging. Okay, let's take a break here.
Do you agree with that, by the way?
I don't think it's wrong. I think it's a multifaceted issue, to be clear. I think, again, when you have a quarterback who holds the ball longer than almost any other quarterback in the league, that's an issue. That's, like, just think about it. Like, from a standpoint of, you're giving the defense more time to get to you when you hold the ball longer, right? Like, at a very simple level. So I think that's absolutely part of it. Now, obviously, you can be like, well, part of the reason he's not getting the ball quicker is because he doesn't have the options to get out quicker. Sure, that's part of it. At the same time, there's a track record of this quarterback holding the ball long time each year. It's just kind of part of his game. That's also what he likes to do at some level. So that's, again, that's baked in at some level. I think the coaching staff is certainly part of it. I don't think they're doing, it's impossible to say the coaching staff is doing everything they possibly can to help the players get better across the board as it relates to Jalen Hurts included in that. So I think it's multiple things, but if you're looking for, like, a high level reason, like you're talking about, can't really disagree with that, because I also think that's a problem elsewhere too, not just as the blitz. It's just, I think there is this idea I mean, you even saw Nick Sirianni's press conference this week when he's talking about how they like rank top 10 or whatever in these certain categories. Like there's a level of, I don't want to say like terrible hubris, like the most hubris I've ever seen, but there's a level, I think, of that.
Okay. I would agree with that.
Let's take a break here, but not before we hear about Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors.
856-906-9295 is where you can find Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors. Voted on by God as the best realtor in history of the universe, as you all very well know. Give her a call or send her a text. Your property, if you own your home or whatever, has probably skyrocketed in value.
Whoa.
You probably already know that, but if you don't, I'm sure it very likely has. So if you even just wanted to get sort of an idea of what it would sell for if you put it on the market, Kristen Roach can give you a home analysis, give you an idea of, you know, what it would sell for if you put it on the market. And no charge for that, of course. We would just ask that you use her if you did eventually put it on the market. Thanks. But again, 856-906-9295 is where you can find her.
Back. Brandon. After this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, Jimmy, we're back here on BGN Radio for potentially our last Eagles preview show of the 2023 season. We'll see what we pick for the Eagles game. But before we get to that game, I want to mention DraftKings Sportsbook, also obviously a sponsor of BGN Radio. And you can check out our Eagles same game parlay that we will be offering. Tweeting out day of the game, have not yet decided, but you can check out the Bleeding Green Nation Twitter account at Bleeding Green to see what that parlay is and get on the action. You can actually find that parlay in the app, so you can just look on it there and join if you would like to make a bet. But I figured, Jimmy, why don't we go through all six playoff games? I don't want to go long on the AFC ones because whatever, that is important. Let's stick to one sentence on the AFC games. You can say one sentence about the game. I'm going to go in chronological order here, starting with, as we're recording today on Saturday, the Browns Texans game. My pick is Browns. I want them to win the Super Bowl, and I think they're going to make a playoff run.
Oh, I can't get behind them winning the Super Bowl with, you know,
But I think they're going to make a run. Anyway, I'm going beyond a sentence. What's your sentence?
CJ Stroud, fun rookie season. Jim Schwartz's defense has been awesome though. And Texans have a bunch of guys on their injury report. Give me Jimmy Schwartz.
Dolphins, Chiefs in the freezing cold, 5-point favorites. I'm going to say Chiefs win to further contribute to first-time playoff starter. Lack of success not going well for Tua Tagovailoa. It's not really a good sentence, but I'm picking the Chiefs.
Wait, what are you saying? He's like a neophyte quarterback?
He didn't play in the game last year because they was Skylar Thompson.
Right.
So, yeah.
Same with CJ Stroud.
Yep.
Same with Mason Rudolph.
Yep.
And there's a fourth guy who hasn't played in any games, too. We'll get to that.
Jordan Love.
Jordan Love. Give me the Chiefs. They rested starters week 18. I just trust Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid more than I trust this Dolphins team that lost their last two. The AFC's wrapped up and they just lost their last two games. And now they're the 5 seed. And as you mentioned, the cold, I think the Chiefs are a pretty easy pick here.
Do you think the Steelers will cover against the Bills? I'm doubting anyone's taking the Steelers to win. So it's a matter of.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be an awful weather game as well. I mean, it might be like a blizzard conditions in that game, which I'm looking forward to watching that game. But and I think like when you have awful weather like that, it's an equalizer. It's a good thing for the underdog. And certainly the Steelers are, you know, they're used to playing in the cold, too. But I don't think we need to overthink this one too much. Josh Allen is just a far, far better quarterback, obviously, than Mason Rudolph. The Bills are, you know, playing like one of the best teams in the NFL down the stretch. And the Steelers are just they are what they are. So I think the Bills, you don't have to overthink it. Take the Bills. But you know, who knows? Like, weird things happen in those really bad weather games.
I like the points. The Bills will win, but I like the points between the weather.
I like the points in that game
and
too.
Tomlin. Yeah. I think the Steelers will muck it up and make it a game. Bills win. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're in the NFC, and obviously this will have some level of impact potentially on how things go for the Eagles if they end up do beating the Bucs and advancing. But first, we start with the Sunday 4:30 game. The Green Bay Packers are in Jerry World to take on the Cowboys. The Cowboys are 7-point home favorites. Who do you have?
Yeah, I mean, the Packers are the youngest team in the NFL, or at least they were when I calculated all their ages at the end of the, you know, after 53-man cutdowns. And they got to be feel probably pretty good about their season because Jordan Love, I think, showed enough where they can look at him and go, okay, well, maybe that guy is our long-term answer quarterback. And their other guys played well enough where, you know, they made the playoffs, of course. And they've had some really good games where, especially offensively, Thanksgiving, for example, in Detroit, they looked awesome in that game. They've had other games where they've looked like crap. So, like, you know, they're kind of like inconsistent, but right now, like, being in the playoffs, they're kind of playing with house money. So they can, you know, maybe they're a little dangerous, but ultimately you got a young team like this, you got a quarterback playing his first playoff game, and you have this Dallas team that is playoff experience, and they tend to, you know, take care of these kinds of teams in the playoffs. I don't know how well they'll fare in the divisional round with whoever they have to face then, but for now, I think the Cowboys are a pretty easy pick over this Packers team, and I think it could get ugly. I think the Cowboys could actually, you know, kind of put it on this Packers team.
I think the Packers will make it a game for a bit, and then, yeah, the Cowboys will ultimately pull away because, like you just said, youngest team, and they just don't have that. They're not there yet. They're not clearly not there yet. The Cowboys are there. They've been dominant at home. How could you possibly pick? Again, this isn't the spot. I know, like, the Cowboys choke in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. That's not this spot to me. That's, again, yeah, that could be the divisional round.
Next week.
That's not this. Yeah. The matchup is not that. And it's not even, I think the Packers are terrible. I just don't think it's that. They just have the juice in the phase of the team that they are. They're just not ready for this. So maybe they cover. Maybe. I don't think so, though. I think the Cowboys win. I think the Cowboys cover. They've been dominant at home. Seems like a pretty obvious and easy bet to me. That brings us to, so we both think the Cowboys are going to win, so therefore,
yeah, I got them winning and covering.
They're the 2 seed. Okay, it's worth noting that for tracking our projected purposes here. Rams, Lions in Detroit. Lions are standard 3-point home favorites. I'll go first this time. I know the Rams have been playing well. I don't have something to really hold against the Rams, but the Lions have also been playing well, and I feel like their story is not, and I know this is dangerous for a team that hasn't won in the playoffs since January 1992, but I just feel like they're not losing this game. I feel like the story of the Lions this year is not a team that goes one and done in the playoffs. I don't think that. I think that Jared Goff, it's the Rams game for him going up against the team that dumped him. And I think that's something that'll resonate with his teammates in that team as a whole. And I think it's going to be a really good game. I love the over. My over, or the over in this game, is my pick for the SB Nation NFL show. Same game parlay that you can also check out in DraftKings Sportsbook. I think it's going to be a high scoring game in that dome. The Rams offense is obviously going to have success against the Lions defense that has been susceptible to allowing yards and points through the air. But ultimately, Lions' run defense has been good. I think they shut down the Rams' rushing attack. And I think the Lions win for the first time in my friend Alex's, who's a long-time suffering Detroit Lions fan, in his life, basically. I mean, he was born in 91, but certainly was not old enough to witness that last Lions playoff win. So I'm going to take the Lions here.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, the NFL playoff win droughts. Lions are tops on that list, 32 years. Dolphins actually have they're number two. They have a chance to break theirs as well. Theirs is 23 years. Raiders at 21. Commanders at 18. The Commanders aren't that far away from having the longest playoff win drought in you know, current NFL history or whatever. I got the Rams in this game.
Yeah.
I think the Rams just, they're skill position players are awesome. Like Puka Nacua just had a tremendous rookie season. Cooper Kupp, basically won the Rams the Super Bowl. That wasn't long ago. It was 2 years ago. They won the Rams won the Super Bowl, and Cooper Kupp was a monster reason why. Kyren Williams won me a fantasy football league. He was outstanding this year. They actually have a run game all of a sudden, the Rams, with Kyren Williams, in addition to their really two good wide receivers. And that Lions secondary just has not been very good this year. That's kind of been their Achilles heel on the season. I think it's going to be a shootout. And I will say this, that stadium is going to be out of control. Like, those fans are going to be extremely loud.
Yeah.
And they're going to, like, I mean, that's going to be kind of like what I think people are talking about, like all over Twitter, like how crazy their fans are in that game, because it's been so long that they've done anything. So that kind of goes against my pick here. But ultimately, I think the Rams are going to figure out how to gash this Lions defense, and they win in a shootout.
Wow. Devastating for the Lions fans. Okay, but then you have the Rams winning. Therefore, that means if the Eagles win, you would have the Eagles playing the Cowboys in Dallas, because then you would have the Rams taking on the 49ers in San Francisco in the divisional round. Assuming, you know, well, the winner, it doesn't matter. The winner, you have the winner of the Eagles-Bucks game in your scenario, where I have the... What do I have? I have the winner of the Eagles Buccaneers playing the 49ers, and you have
There are four potential Eagles opponents in the divisional round, if should they advance. The 49ers, and this is also probably in order of likelihood: 49ers, Cowboys, Lions, and then actually a home game against the Rams. So if the Rams and the Packers both won, then the Eagles would get a home game against the Rams, which would be kind of funny. Highly unlikely for that to happen, obviously. But yeah, in your scenario with the Cowboys and the Lions both winning, the Eagles would go to San Francisco. FML for me on that one.
Yep.
ultimately, if the Cowboys lose, then the Eagles avoid both the 49ers and the Cowboys, of course, because they'll be eliminated. That's the best case scenario for the Eagles watching these games on Sunday. And of course, just for your own enjoyment, watching the Cowboys lose.
Of course.
But like, the Eagles also benefit in a big way if the Cowboys lose on Sunday.
That brings us to the game of the week. The Eagles.
for only fans of two teams, and nobody else.
Oh, yes. Very tongue-in-cheek as I said that. The Eagles are with... This is obviously like up-to-date relative to the A.J. Brown news. The Eagles are... 2.5 point favorites. Favorites on this Eagles team that is 1-5 in their last six games and has played like crap extremely recently, and is going up against a Bucks team that is 5-1 in their last six in Tampa. They're 2.5 point road favorites. I have some of the betting numbers for you, like the percentage of bets placed, Jimmy. 58%. Okay. Of the what's it called, the public is on the
betting public, yeah,
Eagles money line. Same in percent. 58% is on Eagles minus 2.5. So who do you
really
have?
It's weird. I mean, all season long it felt like whoever is going to win that division, whether it was the Bucks, Falcons, Saints, like they're going to be nothing more than a speed bump for whichever of the Cowboys and Eagles didn't win the NFC East. And now, you know, not so much. And like, you look at like, just look, who has the better players at each position. And I think emphatically it's the Eagles. Like, quarterback, the Eagles are better. Running backs, the Eagles are better. Before the AJ Brown went out, wide receivers were better. I think the Bucks have the edge there now. Tight end, Eagles. Offensive line, Eagles. Pass rush, Eagles. Again, this is all on paper. But like, schematically, the Eagles are just a freaking disaster. Like, offensively, no answers to the blitz against a team that is super blitz heavy. Defense, just disaster across the board. The guys don't know their assignments. Defensive coordinator isn't putting his players in the position to succeed. The Bucs just aren't a very good football team, but at least they are organized and seem to know what they're doing. I'll take the Bucs. I mean, I can't pick the Eagles after the way they've looked these last, you know, six games, but especially their last two. I mean, I don't see how they win a football game right now. Give me the Bucks.
Eagles vibes are awful. They're terrible. This is like the some of the worst vibes you could have entering a playoff game, right? Fair to say, has to be there. It has to be all time like bad vibe kind of entering the playoffs game. It's not totally unheard of, unprecedented. I remember when the Cardinals made it a few years ago, they like backslid into the playoffs, I think kind of similarly to the Eagles, like choked away the division and ended up as a wild card. I think they lost to the Rams.
Yeah, their asses kicked. Yeah. I think they lost by like 20 to the Rams.
So it does happen. I'm not saying it never happens, but man, it usually doesn't happen. It's not common. And I have no confidence at all. None. I have zero confidence in the Eagles being able to win this game. That being said, I'm picking them to win because...
Really?
Well, here's the thing. The Bucs are also really not good. They're not good. I watched that. I can't get the Panthers game out of my mind. I watched them. And then before that, they lost to the Saints the week before and only put up, what, like 14 points or something?
Yeah, and if they had won, they win the division. So they had plenty of motivation to play.
And could have rested their starters in week 18, and then Baker might not be hurt as he is.
Right.
Like, so it's a big deal. And I like Todd Bowles as a defensive mind, but he's kind of lacking as a head coach when it comes to like game management and stuff at times.
Sure.
So I don't really think, even as much as I don't love the Eagles coaching right now, that Todd Bowles is this amazing. I think Todd Bowles is a great schemer. He's a better schemer than he is like a coach, I guess, or you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Strategery.
Yes, that's it.
He has good strategery.
He does not have good strategies, but I like his schemes, and you know, I think the motivation factor is there for him, so that's not a problem. But yeah, I mean, the Bucs are outside of Baker healthy, but that's a big deal. The quarterback not being healthy, and certainly the Eagles quarterback is banged up. But I just saw Baker missing like a lot of throws. There are a lot of throws that were there to be made against the Panthers, and the ball was just not even close. It was like Carson Wentz at his worst level of overthrow, inaccurate WTF kind of throw. So that's been kind of like
a running back in the flat just sails it way over his head.
That's kind of been seared into my brain that it's quite possible that the Eagles don't even play well defensively. It's actually not just possible, it's incredibly probable, but it might not matter if the quarterback on the other team can't actually put the ball at all where it needs to be. So and also, I'm gonna be honest, I don't want the Eagles to win this game because, I mean, if they turn the corner, sure.
Ooh.
I don't, because I just, like, I'm, okay, I said it in the, I think the podcast earlier this week, it's not fun. I'm not having fun watching this game. No one's having fun watching these games. They're miserable. They suck so much.
I think that's actually a common sentiment that I've seen on Twitter.
It's a giant waste of time. I don't want to waste my time with another game next week where they go to San Francisco, like I have them in my situation, and then they just get their doors blown off. Like, what's worse than getting blown out by the 49ers once this year? Getting blown out twice. I just don't really... Conceptually, I would love for them to turn it around and flip the switch and be amazing. Sure, I'm not saying I don't want that, but I just don't really see that being realistic, and I'm acknowledging the reality of the situation. And I think it's quite possible that losing this game could potentially force the Eagles to take a more sober view. We talked about how they might not be being totally honest with themselves when it comes to the offense and handling the blitz and everything. Like, maybe losing this game when your favorites on the road against a team that's not that great kind of forces them to take a more honest look at everything going on and make some decisions that could ultimately be in the best interest of the franchise long term. Now, I say that, I realize that it's also it's a heavy thing in terms of, this could be Jason Kelsey's last game. This could be Fletcher Cox's last game with the Eagles. This could be Lane Johnson's last game with the Eagles. It could be Brandon Graham's last game with the Eagles. So it would be very incredibly sad to see them go out with a whimper. Again, I just don't really think it makes that much of a difference, because you win this game, you lose the next week probably anyway. So I'm going to take the Eagles.
Does Nick Sirianni keep his job if they lose this game?
I don't think he should. You asking me should or will?
Will.
I lean towards, in the likelihood of will, that he will stay, but I don't think he should be back. No, because they're a poorly coached team, and I've been saying this for weeks, and I don't see what he brings to the table. And here, I have a quote for you, by the way, just to finish, wrap up my Eagles thing, my pick itself. I just feel like they've made everything so miserable and painful recently that it's almost like too easy. If they just lose this game, that's too easy. That's not painful. The most painful thing would be to win this game in unimpressive fashion like they've done for a lot of the year, and then again get blown out. Have a whole week where you just know they're going to get blown out next week. That would be the most right. annoying, frustrating thing. So I'm kind of leaning into what would be the worst kind of ending. That's what I'm making my pick based on. So I'm taking the Eagles to win and cover, and also everyone else is taking the Bucks. So I don't know, kind of want to be different, make a different pick.
Well, evidently not, given the numbers that you rattled off.
I mean, in the Eagles sphere.
You mean locally?
Yeah, okay. Well, Eagles sphere. That's the entire whatever. That could be anyone.
Yeah,
I have this quote for you from Nick Sirianni that Jeff McLean shared in his podcast, Uncovering the Birds, which is really good. Enjoyed that podcast, and he does a lot of good episodes on there. This is Nick Sirianni, Jimmy, from September 5th this year, or, you know, this season.
Yeah.
He was talking to Jeff McLean about, like, I guess, offensive outlook for 2023. Here's the quote. So one thing we wanted to do with our team offensively, let's say, is try to really, it's not always about coming up with new plays and new wrinkles and new things like that. Sometimes it's just getting better. And a lot of times it's just getting better at your base stuff. And how do you coach it better? And how do you do it better? And off of that, what are some wrinkles off of that? Not necessarily new things, but things that are wrinkles. I guess I would say where I'm going with that is that's the same way I thought about year three. I don't think it's anything new. It's about how do we get better at what we're already doing? So not really the best quote in terms of everyone accusing the offense of not being innovative at all and not doing anything new and not really setting up the players to succeed as much yep. as it's kind of just relying on the talent. And that's not coaching. Like, coaching, I mean, it's ultimately about the players. I get it. But I feel like as a coach, again, basic level, it's about maximizing the talent you have and not just saying, okay, you're the players, you know, figure it out. Or we'll be good enough with the talent alone. Like, you need to maximize the talent you have still. And I don't think Sirianni's done that. And in fact, worse than that, I don't think he's not only not maximized the talent, I think they're underperforming the talent.
Yeah, I mean, that goes kind of, I think that quote kind of is emblematic of, you know, one of the points that we've made on the podcast in the past where, you know, teams obviously studied what they were doing this past mm-hmm. offseason, stole what was working and, you know, made sure they had answers for it or tried to have answers for it this season, particularly for the teams that were going to face them this year. Mm-hmm. And they had better answers for it this year than they did a year ago. And I think that quote is, you know, kind of explains why. Mm-hmm. And like similar thing happened in the Chip Kelly years, of course,
yep.
where everything he did was new in 2013 and teams had trouble. A lot of teams really just had no answers for him at all. And then teams started to have answers for it in 2014. And then they all had answers for it in 2015. And then that was the end of him. So I think that, you know, if you're not constantly evolving your offense and your defense in a way where you can stay ahead of your opposition, then you're going to fall behind eventually. And that's what they did this year.
That's like a real trap with talent sometimes too. You know, you look at these teams who, you know, they achieve a certain level of success and instead of continuing to build or tweak or whatever, they kind of just like, we just rest on their laurels and figure, well, we can just carry that over. Sorry to say, my guy, Dougie P, I think that's kind of what happened with like the Jaguars, for example. It's like, oh, they won the AFC title. We're doing good, but they didn't really, you know, do a lot to maybe they could have personnel-wise to even further put themselves over the top. It's the age-old thing. Like, if you're staying the same, you're falling behind. So,
yeah,
yes, I think that. But anyway, to answer your question, I do think I'm leaning towards Sirianni being back because I think they're going to trot out 3 straight years in the playoffs. And he's has the best winning, one of the best winning percentages in the NFL and all of that stuff. And they're mm-hmm. going to try to make him, you know, change the coordinators and everything. But if it's up to me, I think I've said this before, I'll say it again. It shouldn't be based about what he's done. I don't care what Nick Sirianni has accomplished. I care about what he can accomplish moving forward. And he needs to have a good plan for that. And he needs to be able to articulate what about the Eagles having won a lot under him, he can continue to keep going moving forward, or you know, emphasize that kind of thing. He has to be able to do that and actually prove he can put a good staff together after him or after this year. But I just don't really believe in that at the end of the day, because if it has to be about everything else in terms of getting a new staff and maybe giving, having Sirianni have less power, then what's the point of Sirianni? What is he doing here? What is he? If your argument is like, we need to give Sirianni less power. Well, okay. Then why have him? What is he bringing to the table here? What's the answer to your own question?
I think another thing that's annoyed a lot of the fan base too, is some of their answers in terms of a lot of other teams would love to be in our position where we're in the playoffs. A lot of teams can't say that they're in the playoffs and we can. And that's just an answer that nobody wants to hear because the expectations were so much higher than that. But yeah, I mean, and you know, maybe Nick Sirianni, if they lose this game, maybe Nick Sirianni will have good answers on how to fix things for Jeffrey Lurie whenever they have sort of their, you know, exit interview whenever this season is over. Maybe he won't. And I'm kind of with you. Like, do you have a plan going forward? And if you don't, again, yeah, I think why should we keep you around? Of course, as you know, we've mentioned previously, it's not going to be an attractive place to become a head coach, because from the outside, I mean, the outside view is going to be, well, they just canned a guy that was in the Super Bowl less than a year ago and, you know, and has made the playoffs three straight years. From the outside view, it's going to look crazy for some people that they fired the head coach after that. And of course, they fired their, not fired, but they demoted their defensive coordinator in season while they're 10-3. They're going to look like, you know, wild, just, you know, wild cards, wild card bitches. They're going to look like that, like to some people from the outside, and maybe rightfully so. And I think it's going to be hard to attract, you know, kind of top tier coaching talent if they do let go of Nick Sirianni. So that's another thing for them to consider. And ultimately, I think that's why he probably will be back, even if he doesn't deserve to be.
I know you can quote the winning percentage and everything, but like, such a tough sell to go 1-7. Or sorry, 1-6 if they lose this game to the Bucks, to go to 1-6 in your last seven games and you can't even beat the Bucks. Like, that's just, it's a terrible, like, that's such a hard sell to go into next year. Like, what do you, it's going to be hard to be excited. Like, that's a
for sure
big question. I mean, people will, you know, certainly talk themselves into the new coordinators and maybe they make good coordinator hires, whatever, but still, man, what is the percentage?
And maybe they sign guys in free agency. Sure. Maybe they have a draft that people like. I mean, there's any number of things that can happen during the offseason where people get excited for the 2024 season. Certainly they will.
Right.
But I'm with you. I mean, like, it's you know, if you're just kind of spinning your wheels, never a great look for, you know, an organization that was basically Super Bowl or bust.
And to be clear here, like, I want to make this clear, if it's not already, I'm pretty optimistic still about this team's, like, long-term, like, beyond this. If Sirianni isn't back, I'm actually pretty optimistic, depending, you know, which coach they would hire, that I'm optimistic that a new coaching staff could take this group that they have, talent-wise, largely in place, and turn that around quickly and have success with that. Because I think this group could be way better coached, and that would manifest in better results quickly. I don't think this is by contrast, this isn't where I was feeling about the Eagles, you know, in 2020, where things felt a lot more hopeless because, you know, you're getting rid of Doug. Howie was a big problem post Super Bowl. I think a lot of bad personnel moves in there. Not to say he hasn't contributed to what's gone wrong with this team recently, but I think, you know, and this is me saying this, big Howie critic, I don't think he's, you know, been the near the top problem for this team more recently. So I have optimism that he can make good moves in the offseason. I have optimism that the Eagles will probably get some positive regression next year in terms of Jalen Hurts' turnovers going down and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I where I struggle is if you just bring Sirianni back and the coaching isn't aggressive and the culture is questionable at best right now, and you don't have him being a good coach in terms of game management stuff and giving you an edge, then that puts a damper on things for me. It doesn't make me feel entirely hopeless, because there is enough of a track record of success that, okay, maybe they get back to that. Maybe there was just a bad spell, whatever. They panicked clearly with the Patricia thing. But I think a coaching change to me would be like the biggest point of optimism going into next year. And I don't think it's likely, but I do think it's on the table, and it should be on the table. This is a pathetic all-time collapse. Jimmy, I want to ask you, percentage chance Bill Belichick is the head coach of the Eagles in 2024. Give me a percentage.
I'd say it's very, very close to zero. Mm-hmm. Like 0.001 chance Bill Belichick is the head coach of the Eagles. Because Howie isn't going anywhere, okay? So we all understand that, right? Howie's going nowhere, and Bill Belichick wants full control. It's not happening in Philadelphia.
He said he wouldn't need that at a new job.
Okay, so there's other reporting that says he would. 0.001. I'd say 0.001 is maybe a little maybe that's stretching a little. I'll say 1%. Okay, but it's not. It's just not a. Howie wants nothing to do with Bill Belichick being here, and he's gonna be around. Like Howie's going nowhere. I think the roster is fine. Like maybe we overrated the roster a little bit collectively as just this Philadelphia region and nationally as well, maybe overrated this roster. Still a very good roster. Like, let's be honest, they have talent. And I'd put the failings more on the coaching staff, obviously, than anything the front office did.
Right.
But I think that's a dynamic where you're just asking for all kinds of trouble if you bring Bill Belichick in to coach this team.
6.66% is my answer. The likelihood that Bill Belichick is the Eagles coach.
Because you think he's Satan?
I mean, just that's the person. That's I crunched the numbers. That's what came up in my calculator. 6.66%. Okay. This has been the final, potentially, depending on what the Eagles do, BGN Radio preview show of the year. Certainly, we will be back with you, win or lose, to recap this game. And potentially more if there is coaching news or whatever is to follow after this. We'll be here either way. So we appreciate you rating, reviewing, subscribing, all those good things, and supporting our sponsors, which, as I like to say often, the podcast is free, which, hey, if you want to enjoy it and it's free and you don't want to pay any money towards it, that's fine. If you really like it and you want to help the lights stay on here, well, it's even better if you help support our sponsors, because you also get perks out of that too. So it's kind of a win for everyone involved. You can check all those out in the episode description on whatever podcast app you're using. In addition, you can check out our social media handles where you can tweet at us and talk to us about your thoughts on the show. Okay. We will be back early. Well, I was gonna say early next week. I was like thinking it was like a Sunday game because, you know, it should be, or a Saturday game. But unfortunately, it's a Monday game. So I guess we'll be back.
Monday night game number 14 on the season for us.
Probably like Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, you're going to be flying back. So like Wednesday-ish? Yeah. Sometime after.
I'm actually staying out there an extra day. I'm flying back on Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
But maybe I'll bring my recording equipment out there.
Yeah.
I can pod on the road.
There we go. Okay. We'll talk to you next time.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.